people aren't going to meet you where you are. You have got to stretch to meet them where they are.
The Worth Report, featuring Nick Wharton and Glenn Wright.
I had a no-nonsense dad that made sure that we understood clearly that without education, we were nowhere.
We'll take a look at the past, present, and future of the financial landscape and discuss how it affects you, your family, the world around you, and most importantly, your retirement.
From the time they were born, I began to take out savings bonds. And my goal was, whatever difference it'll make when it comes time to go to college, I want to make sure I have some money. And so when the oldest was ready to go off to college, I had $25,000 saved for him. We have got to be a lot more intentional about saving.
This is The Worth Report. Now, here are your hosts, Nick Wharton and Glenn Wright.
Good Saturday. If it's Saturday, it's The Worth Report. Welcome. I'm your host, Nick Wharton, along with Glenn Wright, founder and president of Worth Financial. Each week, we'll bring you news that you can immediately use to manage your financial planning and offer commentary on local, national, and global events that affect your ability to sustain your financial future. Glenn, how are you feeling this morning?
I'm feeling great. How about yourself, Nick?
I am doing absolutely wonderful. You know, last week, we celebrated my son's 30th birthday party in New York City. We had a great time. Went to Walt Frazier's Wine and Dine restaurant.
Oh, man, I know you had a great time then.
We had an extraordinary time. We really did. How about yourself? How was your week?
It was good. It was very busy. Just in a lot of meetings, and but very, very productive, man. But really been excited. I have to be honest with you. Really excited about this show today.
Excellent. So am I. And you know, we have a special guest with us today. Today we have arguably one of the leading and most respected financial services executives in the Charlotte region and in the nation, Bridget Ann Hamden. She's considered a titan of industry. She was a senior manager with over 30 years of global financial information technology and strategic planning and human capital management experience. Most recently, she retired as serving as lead and trusted advisor to the chief operating officer for the Federal Student Aid organization on Capitol Hill. Bridget Ann, how are you this morning?
I am doing well, very well. Thank you, Nick.
Wonderful. You know, it's interesting. Each week, Bridget Ann, we deal with a whole range of topics around financial management and trying to help folk to really develop their sustainability in this very uncertain times we're dealing in. I also know that you have a sincere passion for women and wealth management and also just trying to uplift our community. This is African American History Month. How exciting is that?
Very, very exciting.
So, right. So I just want to turn to you and ask you, what is the most significant issue that you're seeing that's affecting the African American community around wealth management?
Nick, I think our inability to be prepared for the future, whether it's retirement, whether it's saving for our children's college, that level of comfort seems to be missing for me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you know, it's interesting. You spent a great deal of time at the epicenter of very important financial matters that affect all communities, not just the African American community. Most recently, you spent some very important time on Capitol Hill dealing with the issues of student aid. What can we learn about the state of affairs that we're dealing with the student aid these days?
Well, you know, the first thing is I've got to give lots of compliments to our president. When he came into power, he removed the banks from the equation, and that enabled us to put millions of dollars back into student aid. So that shave that we were giving the banks disappeared, and in fact, our people were able to be beneficiaries of all of that aid. So that's something I have to give a big up to the president
sure.
for.
Sure.
But what I've also seen is that the more aid we have in the system, the higher the fees are for the universities. And so kids, young men and women, are coming out of college with an enormous amount of debt, so much so that they cannot, in my opinion, in their lifetime, in some cases, be able to repay that debt. And not only are they coming out, but generations are coming out because their parents took out debt for them. And so many of them have been affected by the financial crisis. So even though we have had a groundswell of funds going back into the student aid community, it still isn't manifesting itself in benefits to these students. Yes, they have a degree, but they are burdened with debt, which to me is somewhat of a travesty.
Question: What have you found to be the difference between before our president made these changes and now to the end user, the end person receiving the loan?
That's a touchy question because, in fact, John Q. Public will say that there has been quite a focus on repayment. But understand that the federal government is in business to help you get through school. But this is, quote unquote, a business.
A business.
And so repayment is like every other obligation that you have. Mm-hmm. That has taken on a different slant. But in terms of the answer to your question, I think more money has been put into the system. So the state before the president and after, in my opinion, there's just been a hell of a lot more dollars that have been put into the system.
So, Bridget, I know that you have a love of education. You have a family full of educators. So it wasn't by chance that you found yourself on Capitol Hill focusing on student aid that will help students. And so as you look at the dilemma that we find ourselves in, and you look to the future, we came out of the housing crisis. What is this crisis going to look like with student aid?
It is going to be massive. It is going to span generations. You have, because of the housing crisis, you have individuals who had to defer payments on their loans. And then they looked around and their kids are ready to go to college. And so they had to try and help their kids. What we are finding now is the over 65 population, they're beginning to garnish their Social Security check to pay back for loans. And that, to me, is a major travesty. So it is what it is, you know. And to me, I want to focus on ensuring that we can have parents more prepared to deal with getting their kids off to college. And it means looking at our ability to save. Mm-hmm. As African Americans, we are not anywhere close to saving at the level that our white counterparts are saving. Mm-hmm. And we have to look at moving from a very materialistic approach to things to more of a savings approach. I happen to have been a single mom raising two kids, but was fortunate enough to be in a position where I had to make some choices. I had to have live-in help because I traveled the world. My job involved that. But I gave up some of my privacy because I understood the importance of making sure that I had the children well taken care of. From the time they were born, I began to take out savings bonds. And my goal was, whatever difference it'll make when it comes time to go to college, I want to make sure I have some money. And so when the oldest was ready to go off to college, I had $25,000 saved for him and so on and so forth. So it now you don't have to do savings bonds, but you can do your 5-0 whatever. And it is a little at a time. Putting that into the pot. Because, yes, there will be loans, there will be grants, but the more we as parents can save, and those are choices we can make. Do I need to buy a new car that depreciates the minute it walks off the lot? Or do I need to continue to drive, as I do, my 12-year-old, no, it's 2000, so it's 16-year-old truck that I bought new, but it works, you know? We have got to be a lot more intentional about saving.
Wow, that's powerful stuff. So a few weeks ago, I had the pleasure of seeing you honored as a titan of industry at that fabulous event where Ed Gordon, famous TV news personality, hosted that affair. And you shared a number of jewels that deal with personal accountability. And I thought, I wanted to ask you this question, and I didn't have a chance to, but it seemed like some of the values that you created came from a real cultural clarity in your background. Is that accurate? Where does that kind of sense of personal accountability come from?
Yeah, it did. It did. I had a no-nonsense dad that made sure that we understood clearly that without education, we were nowhere. And so one of the things he did, we were fortunate to have a lot of land, but he had parceled them all off, and each of us had our piece. Mm-hmm. And we had to go with our little notebook and collect the rent.
Really?
So this is, I mean, I was 12, you know, and I'm going out there with my little notebook and I'm writing down $15 a month that I'm given. And so they don't, you know, they weren't paying it all at the same time. Maybe they give us 10. And so that financial accountability was very much a part of our growing up. Mm-hmm. And the other thing was the issue of humility. My dad taught us humility. Every year, right after Christmas, we identified 5 or 6 beggars that came to the house. We had to feed them, wash their feet, wash their hands, and it was his way of giving back. But what that taught me was to whom much is given, much is expected. You know, and so from a very early age, I was taught to be humble, to know that, you know, I need to take care of those who are not as fortunate as I am, but I also need to get my education. And so those things have become the hallmark of my life.
Wow, that's powerful stuff. So from what I know of you, what I see of you for the last several years, I mean, you are an authentic leader, and I always see you treating those who have less notoriety or you know, public image than you with certain grace, you know, and respect. And I'm just impressed by that. Now I know where that comes from.
Thank you. Thank you. But it's not about me, right? It's about bringing up the larger community. And I think we all have that responsibility. And I do so with a heightened sense of urgency because I'm not going to be around forever and ever. And so any opportunity I get, whether it's at the department or whether it's here in Charlotte, it is all about raising the tide of our community.
Wow. You spoke in our pre-show about some ways on helping from a wealth management perspective in our community. Could you share a little bit of that again?
Well, you know, again, when I was in corporate America, my policy was north of $1 million, because I figured if I died, boy, my kids would be much better off than I was. I came here as a first generation immigrant.
So you mean your life insurance policy?
My life insurance policy.
Okay, got it.
Right?
Got it. Okay.
Because that is the quickest way for us as African Americans to build wealth. Mm. You know, we don't do that enough. Mm. We think about this gory subject of death, and it's not something we want to tackle. Mm. If you really and truly want to make sure that your kids are better off, then you do that. When you look at the number of people who are in corporate America and you look at the minuscule cost of life insurance, multiples of 3 or 4 and then double indemnity if you die on the job, there's no reason for the senior executives not to be carrying $5 million worth of insurance. There's no reason. So that to me is one way. The other way is really and truly to make savings a key hallmark. And savings also means, how do you have those supper time conversations that your other colleagues are having? My kids all have their own investment accounts. From the time they were born, I was taking out fractional shares for them in the market. There were programs that allowed me, UGMA, you know, to take out fractional shares, and I picked stocks that they liked. So my kids have Nike, they have Coca-Cola, you know, but they're now at the point where they have their own portfolios. We talk about stock investing. That's the stuff we talk about. We talk about sports because I have 3 boys. We talk about a lot of sports, but we are intentional. I am intentional about passing on my knowledge to them. So things that I feel at my age I can't invest in, I told my kids, AIG, go ahead, guys, at 33 cents, invest in AIG. You guys know where AIG is today. Mm-hmm. That's the kind of conversation we need to be having with our kids. Don't be afraid of wealth managers. Mm-hmm. They can help you. They understand where you are at any point in your life, and they should be able to bring products to you. And you all are here to help the individuals, meet them at whatever point they're at, and help them grow that mustard seed into something much bigger.
Absolutely.
Wow. Well, Bridget Ann, this is just amazing, the jewels of information you're sharing. And you do it so effortlessly that because you always share it, right?
Right.
But it's good for us to hear it, and it's good for the audience to be hearing this. So here we are in Charlotte. As you are familiar with the social mobility study, lots of rich information there. What we know is that we are 50 out of 50 cities for moving working poor from the working poor up to working the working middle class. And the data is clear. It's really extraordinary that in this city of all this affluence that we're, you know, at that place. Some of the leaders in the city seem to be engaged in conversations and task force and so forth and so on. Much of what you shared with what you share with your children is an aspect of the sort of social capital that you grew up with, right? Inspired by your parents. So how do we get this kind of insight and foresight into those who, quite frankly, are not a part of these circles of conversation? What does that look like for you?
That's a tough one because, you realize that, first of all, there's an old saying, he who knows not that he knows not is a fool. In a lot of cases, we think we have arrived, right? And so we operate in this purgatory space that you're neither really wealthy and the opportunities are flowing, or you're not down there. Because you just, you're making $500,000, you're making $1 million, so you think you've arrived. And what you don't understand is, as one of the titans of wealth said, until you can predict that $1 million that you make, you're a couple of paychecks away from poverty. Until you can structure your lifestyle where your debt-to-income ratio is just about 0 to 100, you are at the beck and call of whomever it is that you work for. So there are a couple of things. Entrepreneurship is great. I push it, and I applaud you for doing that. But there's still a lot of space in corporate America for us. And what we have to do is, A, to be much more prepared for those opportunities. Mm. And when they come, bring a lot more of people who look like us into the foray. There is no reason for us to feel like we need to be the only one anymore. There is absolutely. So what am I saying? I am saying that we have to help raise the tide. Many of us are given great opportunities in corporate America. Many of us take those opportunities but don't do as much as they can do. And I will challenge all of us as a community to create our own. We keep looking for help. And that's all well and good. But the minute you have to keep looking for help, you're going to get crumbs. You're not going to get the salient pieces, right? But a number of us are in positions where we are decision makers. So what are we doing? How are we making those decisions? How are we holding people to task when we sit on boards? What are we doing? You know, we sit on these big boards and we, in most cases, are the only one. And that's okay. We are at the table. Now, is our voice being heard? Are you in the conversation? You may be at the table, but are you in the conversation? And when you're in the conversation, are you prepared to call the hard calls? And you have to be. So,
wow, that's powerful.
Yeah.
You know, so when I think about our city and look at it and compare it to Atlanta and Chicago, some other thriving cities, right? It's been said that we here in Charlotte have avoided the sort of urban sort of unraveling uprisings that other cities have had in face of, you know, police brutality and different episodes, right? We've been a city that sort of have been able to dodge that. Some have said that part of it is because we have a community of wealthy or well-to-do African Americans who really don't raise the kind of issues of equity, either in the boardroom or in the community. What do you think about that? Is that relevant?
I'm so glad I've retired from the federal government, so now I can speak my that is true. That is true. I think there is some reluctance to hold people accountable, and until we can do more of that, we will continue. Power is never ceded. I am not at all thinking that we need to have a revolution. But I am fearful that there is going to be a groundswell. I was at a function not too long ago, the movements, the youth movements that are coming up, are some of them are very well thought out. They are being led by people who can articulate their positions very succinctly. And there's going to be a reckoning. We could either wait for that reckoning, right, or we can get in and be a part of the solution. And that is what I want to urge our community to do, to truly be a part of the solution. We can't have X number of people sit in the back room and make decisions for the betterment of this community. The urbanization of our community is very much an economic force, but it doesn't mean that we have to always displace. We can come up with solutions that are much more inclusive than they are. Those are the things that create the burn. And when the burn gets to be at an intolerable level, we will see it manifested in our communities. Many of us take the same route into town every day, and we don't go into a lot of the communities that are struggling. Right. And so it's not a part of our consciousness. But we have to understand that it will seep into our nice, pristine communities if we don't do something about it. And so I think that those of us who are fortunate to be in the positions where the conversations are happening must take it upon ourselves to make a difference.
Giving you financial news you can use. This is The Wirth Report with Nick Wharton and Glenn Wright. When I say the word future, what do you think about? Your kids? Your retirement? For me, I wanted security and comfort. Then I met Glenn Wright with Wirth Financial. And that's what I got, security and comfort. Glenn is a real financial advisor. He walks you through every step of your financial future and gives you a plan that will work for you. So do what I did. Pick up the phone and call Wirth Financial, 704-731-0121, or simply log on to their website at worthadvisors.com. Trust me, you'll be glad you did. For financial news you can use and for some security and comfort, get in touch with Wirth Financial today. You're listening to The Wirth Report with Nick Wharton and Glenn Wright, giving you financial news you can use.
Welcome back to The Wirth Report. Again, I'm your host, Nick Wharton, here with my good friend and colleague, Glenn Wright. Glenn, that was an amazing, amazing conversation with Bridget Ann Hampton.
Absolutely. Sure was. It was incredible.
Did it move you that much as well?
It moved me. It moved me. It was very inspirational. She was very transparent and very open in a way that we really try to be, you and I try to do on the show. And I mean, it was incredible.
It really was. And so what resonated for me is her authenticity.
Yes.
You know, she's a true leader, her humility. And in fact, where her humility came from was just really inspiring. It just was really... really very, very powerful presentation, maybe the best interview, you know. And so when I think about some of the jewels that she left with us, what do you think about her comments around life insurance and the importance of life insurance?
Well, it's powerful. It is an immediate and definite way to build wealth. You know, you may not know what you have saved. You don't know what the markets are going to go. The stock markets may go. But if you buy a life insurance policy and you die, you know that money's going to go to your family. And then life insurance, what I think about is life insurance is one of the biggest tax loopholes in the code. You know, we talk about using the tax code to build wealth. If you buy life insurance and you can buy a term policy, you know, if you're younger, for pennies on the dollar, and you pass away, your family receives that money income tax free. That's powerful. There's nowhere else to do that. 401k, anywhere else, you're going to pay tax when you receive that money, when you inherit that. But this account, you'll get income tax free. So life insurance is powerful. You buy life insurance because you love somebody. So what she said is, hey, I love somebody. I want to make sure they're provided for while I'm here. And when I'm not here, I want to make sure I do that. So that was very powerful for me. And she understands that that is a way that can guarantee that wealth will be passed down to the next generation.
That's true. That's true. And Glenn, you know, on this show, we talk about the idea if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. And she talked about the idea of securing life insurance as a young professional. And she saw that grow over many years and was able to have significant resources for college education for her children. Just extraordinary, notwithstanding all of the challenges her life went through.
Yes.
So that was impressive, and I think that's clearly news that many people can certainly use, particularly women. So her other point she made was about savings.
And how important is that? She said a couple of things. One is she was an avid saver. So, you know, we all have perils in our life. So these things that happen, the car breaks down, so I need a new roof. You know, these things are a part of life. And if either you're going to pay for it one way or the other, either you're going to go in debt to pay for it and had to pay Guido, or i.e. Capital One and some of these other credit card companies, or you're going to save the money and have it available to pay for it for you. So now your lifestyle doesn't change. That's powerful. But what really hit me is it's clear she made some great. She had a good financial plan. She started saving and doing the right things. But you know what? She talked to her family about it. She talked to her kids about it. And to be able to share that with them, we don't do that often enough. You know, my mother and I've talked about this in the past. We had our good days and we had our bad days. But you know what? She sat down and let me know what's going on. And with working with, you know, all these different people that I've met with over time, that's an area that people don't focus on enough, is talking to your kids about where you are financially and how they can do even better than what you've done. And that's what she instilled in her children. So that was just powerful to me.
Completely spot on. You know, when she talked about the notion of not being afraid of having conversations with wealth management, financial advisors, the notion of seeking wise counsel. It's often said in Charlotte, even though we're the second largest financial center in the country, that oftentimes we don't access the resources that are here to help us manage our finances. And that's sort of an irony. It's almost a paradox, really. And she sort of dispelled the sort of myth of just being, you know, uncomfortable with those who know more about this thing called money, and just really challenged us to sort of reach out and seek counsel.
Nick, think about this. The president of the United States, and we don't know who he's going to be in the future, right? But we know whoever he or she may be, they're going to be the most powerful person in all the land. We know that. And I've thought about this from time to time. The most powerful person in the land can humble himself enough to say, I don't know everything about everything. So let me get a Secretary of Treasury, a Secretary of Defense, and really build a cabinet of qualified people to help them to make all the decisions, so he can receive all the information so he can make the best decision possible. Why don't we do that? And that's what she's saying. She's saying, let me be like Henry Ford. Let me get the best people possible that can help us to make the best decisions possible. And kudos to her. Kudos to her. And right. I hope our listeners are listening to
that. Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that we can talk about our conversation, you know, with Bridget Ann forever. But the thing that one of the last notes that she made was, as an African-American woman who had risen to a high level in corporate America, she sort of admonished many for not creating more access for others with respect to those who make it to the top. And that was really a powerful, transparent statement.
Indeed.
Wow. Mm. I think there's a lot of financial news that you can use. If you'd like to learn more about anything you've heard here today, contact Worth Financial. The website is worthadvisors.com, 704-731-0121. See you next week.